ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भगवद गीता चैप्टर 11। द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द यूनिवर्सल फॉर्म। टेक्स्ट नंबर 55। मत्कर्म कृन्मत्परमो मद्भक्तसंगवर्जिता निर्वैरस्सर्वभूतेषु यसमामेति पांडव। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Translation. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. Purport. Anyone who wants to approach the supreme of all the personalities of Godhead on the Krishna Loka planet in the spiritual sky and be intimately connected with the supreme personality Krishna must take this formula as stated by the supreme himself. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is a book directed to the conditioned souls who are engaged in the material world with the purpose of lording it over nature and who do not know of the real spiritual life. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to show how one can understand his spiritual existence and his eternal relationship with the Supreme Spiritual Personality and to teach one how to go back home, back to Godhead. Now here is the verse which clearly explains the process by which one can attain success in a spiritual activity, devotional service. As far as work is concerned, one should transfer his energy entirely to Krishna conscious activities. As stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.255, Anasaktasya Vishayan Vitharham Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Muchite. No work should be done by any man except in relationship to Krishna. This is called Krishna Karma. One may be engaged in various activities, but one should not be attached to the result of his work. The result should be done only for him. For example, one may be engaged in business, but to transform that activity into Krishna consciousness, one has to do business for Krishna. If Krishna is the proprietor of the business, then Krishna should enjoy the profit of the business. If a businessman is in possession of thousands and thousands of dollars, and if he has to offer all this to Krishna, he can do it. This is work for Krishna. Instead of constructing a big building for his sense gratification, he can construct a nice temple for Krishna. And he can install the deity of Krishna and arrange for the deity's service, as is outlined in the authorized books of devotional service. This is all Krishna karma. One should not be attached to the result of his work, but the result should be offered to Krishna. And one should accept as prasadam the remnants of offering to Krishna. If one constructs a very big building for Krishna and installs the deity of Krishna, one is not prohibited from living there. But it is understood that the proprietor of the building is Krishna. That is called Krishna consciousness. If, however, one is not able to construct a temple for Krishna, one can engage himself in cleansing the temple of Krishna. That is also Krishna karma. One can cultivate a garden. Anyone who has land, in India at least, any poor man has a certain amount of land. can utilize that for Krishna by growing flowers to offer him. One can sow tulsi plants because tulsi leaves are very important and Krishna has recommended this in Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Krishna desires that one offer him either a leaf or a flower or a fruit or a little water. And by such an offering, he is satisfied. This leaf especially refers to the tulsi. So one can sow tulsi and pour water on the plant. And thus, even the poorest man can engage in the service of Krishna. These are some of the examples of how one can engage in working for Krishna. So it's a long purport, and we may be taking the course of the discussion. And before we begin the discussion, let us do Mangalacharan. Hare Krishna. So here we are reading the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is the final verse, the last verse of this chapter. And the next chapter is exclusively going to deal with pure devotional service. This is the chapter where the Lord is displaying his universal form, the Virat Roop, that consisted of all the planetary systems of the universe. Arjuna could see the entire planetary systems consisting of so many planets and stars, all warriors of the Kurukshetra. And he could see everything, whatever is there existing within that universal form. And then he concludes that Krishna is the original personality from whom everything emanates. So, as with any other chapter, or most of the chapters, this chapter also concludes by emphasizing on pure devotional service. If you remember, beginning from the 7th chapter, this section consisting of the middle 6 chapters of the Gita focuses mostly on pure devotional service. And the 6th chapter, the ending of the 6th chapter was the preface, something like a preface for the beginning of the section consisting of pure devotional service. The 6th chapter ended with the verse, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratma. Krishna is saying, one who meditates on my personal form is the highest of all yogis. So now this chapter also is ending with a similar kind of instruction. Mat karma krin mat paramo mat bhakta sangavarjita nirvairas sarva bhuteshu yasamameti pandava. Engage in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruity activities and mental speculation. So the emphasis throughout the Gita is on pure devotional service unto Krishna. So, how can we understand what exactly is devotional service? All of us are engaged in some kind of service. We either serve our family members, some of us may be serving our friends and relatives, some of us are serving our employers, our bosses, our company's interests, fulfilling the mission of the company. Some of us may be rendering some social service also, rendering some service to our community. Some of us may be rendering some service on a still larger scale to the state or country. So whatever activity we do, it's a kind of service all the time, whether we agree or not. Some kind of service to someone. If someone argues, I don't serve anyone, then he is serving his own senses, his own mind and senses, serving the dictations of his urges. So at any point of time, we cannot avoid service. Service to anyone. Therefore, the dharma of a living entity is defined as service. That which cannot be separated at any point of time from a living entity. Just as the dharma of sugar is sweetness. Sugar is always sweet. If there is some variety of sugar that is not sweet, we don't call it sugar. Or salt, that is always salty. Water is always liquid. So these are all inherent characteristics of a certain kind of elements. And that element is known by that characteristic, that feature. Similarly, every living entity's dharma is defined as his tendency to serve, to render service to someone. That's what actually constitutes real dharma. So we all are serving someone at all points of time. But devotional service, how do we understand that? The word devotion, we always, most of the time deals with devotion to God. Devotional songs or devotional paintings, devotional music or devotional arts. So whenever the word devotion or devotional comes, we understand that there is some understanding of or some aspect of God and religion involved in it, that kind of activity. So devotional service means rendering loving service to God, to Krishna. That is devotional service. And devotional service all the time means that it is rendered out of love, voluntarily, not out of force. We don't say, I'm rendering devotional service to my company or my devotional service to my nation. Those are not considered devotional. Those are considered maybe sometimes out of duty or sometimes out of force or sometimes due to lack of any other opportunity. Not out of love, most of the times. So, devotional service is exclusively reserved for God. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita is throughout emphasizing. So, when we understand, when we try to understand service, so service comes under different categories. The most concentrated, selfish form of service is one satisfying one's own self-interest. We all want to satisfy our own senses. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki, Shri Gaur Nitai ki, Shri Gopal ji ki. All of us tend to satisfy our own demands, bodily demands, mental demands. And one who is only focused on satisfying his own desires, we call him a selfish person. Right? We consider his approach to be very narrow-minded and too restricted. He who doesn't care anything about anyone else, we call him selfish. And that kind of service is not very much appreciated by everyone else. So self-service or service centered around satisfying one's own desires is one kind of service. The most basic level of service. The most grossest kind of service. If you go a little ahead, try to elevate the quality of service. Service can be considered better if it is rendered to our near and dear ones, our family members, our relatives, our friends. A person who is constantly thinking not only of himself, but also considering the interests of his friends and family members, is considered better than a person who is focused only on his own interests. right? So he wants to maintain his family members, provide nice accommodation, nice food for his relatives and friends, serve them to whatever capacity he can, and take care of the friends and family members' needs. He is considered in a better position than a totally selfish person. So that kind of service is little higher, of a better quality. A person who is still more broad-minded, he is rendering service to his community, not just his close friends and family members. He wants to render service to his community members or his society where he is living. His community. He is considered still more better. Still better than a person who is rendering service to his only family members or relatives. So service to a broader class of people is higher, more broad-minded. So that kind of service is of a higher quality. And such a person is considered better than the previous two classes of men. Let us extend this logic still further. A person who is rendering service to his state or his nation, a patriot is considered of a greater, of a better person than a person who is restricted to his own community. A person sacrificing his life for the nation's cause in a war or in a battlefield, his service is considered of very high quality. Right? And people applaud him, that country gives him a national award or a Bharat Ratna, some kind of award to recognize his efforts and sacrifice. And so that his name is remained in the pages of history. People will recognize him, people will appreciate his sacrifice. So that service to the nation or the country is considered to be of a very top quality service. And a person who is rendering service to world at large, maybe a person rendering service in the United Nations World Health Organization or in the UN Peacekeeping Force, something like that, who is taking care of the welfare of human interests overall, not just the country or a state or his community. He is interested in humanity at large. That's his focus. His vision is not restricted to national barriers or international barriers. Whoever is a human being, he considered his own man, his own member, his own family member. So he sees the whole world as his own family. And therefore he renders service to everyone without any discrimination. And that service is considered still higher. And the whole world recognizes him. Maybe he can get a Nobel Prize for peace. The world may recognize him like that. So service to the whole humanity, service to the world, is the best kind of service we can at least conceive of right now. Can we think of any other service higher than this? I didn't expect that kind of answer. Too high. But persons who are not aware of God, who is God and what is devotion service. We are talking on a general platform. People who do not know what is devotion service. We are trying to gradually build up the case. Some people may say, I consider all species of life to be my own members. So you may even care for animals equally as good as caring for human beings. So that service is still higher. But very few people appreciate that kind of service. So if you extend this logic further, if we are rendering service on a universal level, not just our own planet or our own this planet Earth, restricted to this planet Earth, a service that can be rendered on a universal level, that service logically must be of a higher quality. Right? And because we have no idea of how to render such kind of service, we are restricted to, at best, service to humanity or service to the world. So therefore the Bhagavatam describes that Krishna is the root of all creation. God is the center of all creation. Just as the government is the center of the nation, the controlling power of the whole country, and if you are rendering service to the country, the service is distributed to everyone who is staying inside the country, who are citizens of the country. Similarly, if we render service to the root of the whole creation, the root of the universal creation, logically it means that we are serving the interests of everyone within the universal creation. Right? So therefore, the Bhagavatam compares service to God like watering the root of the tree. Yatha taror moola nishechanena tripyanti tat skandha bhujopashakha. Just as by watering the root of the tree, we are providing nourishment to the whole tree. Flowers, twigs, leaves, branches, stem, all parts of the tree gets nourishment simply by pouring water at the root. Because the root is connected to all parts of the tree. Similarly, when we are watering the root of the universal creation, our service is distributed all over the universe. That's how we can render the highest service beyond the barriers of nation, society or country. So therefore, we need to understand the science of how to render the best quality service. I have to render service anyway. I can't escape it. Right? So why not render the best quality service? Let me seek out the root of all creation, the root of all existence. And by channelizing my energy in that direction, I will benefit the whole creation, all species of life. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is targeting or directing us towards that kind of service. Krishna is the root of all creation. And Krishna is requesting or inviting us to render service to Him. And in that way, we can be rendering the best possible service to everyone. Another example that the Bhagavatam gives is of the whole body. To provide nourishment to the body, we just need to provide food to the stomach through the mouth. And then the whole body is satisfied. We don't need to individually, separately provide nourishment to each and every limb of the body. Just as we don't pour water at every leaf and flower of the tree. Right? So all parts are taken care of simply by providing food to the stomach. The whole body is energized. So similarly, when we are serving Krishna, we are taking care of the whole tree of the universal creation. And that is the best top quality service that we can render within our capacity. So this verse, 1155, is talking about rendering that kind of service to Krishna. Mat karma krin mat paramo. Engage in doing my work. Mat paramo. Considering me the supreme. If you don't understand Krishna is the supreme or the root of all creation, then we won't be convinced about the effects of rendering that service. So we need to understand that Krishna is the root of all creation. And service to Him is the best kind of service. Mad bhakta sangha varjita. So in this verse, Krishna is primarily giving five instructions. Mad bhakta, first one. Let us analyze, try to analyze. Mad bhakta. Burijan Prabhu in his book, Surrender Unto Me, gives a very nice analysis of this whole verse. Bhakti must be performed Bhakti must be performed purely, mat bhakta. The devotee must fully engage in the 9 processes of devotional service. The only goal is Krishna's service with no desire for attainments in this world. So when we are rendering service to Krishna, we must not be tempted or allured by various benefits that come out of it. Along with service to Krishna, so many other benefits may come on the way as byproducts. So we should not be diverted by them. And we should remain focused on continuing our service to Krishna. Samad Bhakta. Next is Sangha Varjita. Bhakti must be free from karma and gyan. A devotee should not associate with persons who are against Krishna. And he should not become attracted to anything but pure devotion. Sangha Varjita. Rejecting the unwanted things. Unwanted things may include unwanted association of people who are against devotional service or unwanted benefits that come out of Krishna's service. So disassociating ourselves from people who are envious of Krishna, who are inimical towards Krishna, who have a hatred towards Krishna and his devotional service. So disassociating ourselves from such kind of people, it's a part of rendering pure devotional service. Lord Chaitanya also instructed us. What is that? He says rejecting the association of non-devotees is a part of Vaishnava etiquette. Asat sangatyag ei Vaishnavachar. So staying away from non-devotee association as much as possible, that is crucial in is a critical part of our rendering pure devotional service. And another thing that Sangha Varjita means is rejecting all the side benefits, byproducts that come out of rendering pure devotional service. Devotees should remain disentangled from such a person's karma. In the sense, persons who are against devotional service. The third one, Mat Karma Kran, which comes here, this is the first in the verse. The work of bhaktas must be for Krishna. A devotee should use his energy fully in Krishna's service while remaining detached from the fruits of his work. So when we are rendering, right now we may not be in a position to render direct devotional service, like rendering service to the deity or taking part in the 9 processes of devotional service like hearing and chanting. We may be engaged in so many other work. In fact, Prabhupada addresses this point in his purport. He says, one should not be attached to the result of his work, but the result should be offered to Krishna. And one should accept as prasadam the remnants of offerings to Krishna. So if you are engaged in any other occupational duty, which may not be a direct devotional service in the form of hearing and chanting or deity worship, then what we can do is we can continue our work and sacrifice the results of our work in the mission of Krishna. That is also considered as good as rendering pure devotional service. Because whenever we are working, we are fixed in the consciousness that this result is not for my enjoyment, but it's meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. It's meant for Krishna's satisfaction, Krishna's pleasure. So that kind of work is also as good as rendering pure devotional service. Mat karma krit. And finally, the devotee must be friendly to all. Nirvaira. He must compassionately desire to give Krishna consciousness to others. So, engaging in the mission of Krishna, and Krishna's mission is described in the Gita in the last chapter. Lord Krishna himself says, one who is engaged in giving this message to others, giving this confidential message of the Gita to others, people who are ignorant of it, that is the best service. Because by doing that, we are engaging so many other people in Krishna's service. We are engaging ourselves, that is very good. But if we can convince others, inspire others to render devotional service to Krishna, that pleases Krishna even more. And such a person, Krishna says, is the best devotee, right? Yeah, he is a top class devotee. So therefore, nirvaira, we should be eager to share this message with others. People who are ignorant about it. People who are ignorant about this confidential science of rendering devotion service, which we discussed how it is the topmost service that we can render to anyone. So these are the five main points covered in this verse. And Krishna is encouraging us to render devotion service in whatever way possible, either directly or indirectly, or through our occupational duties. Whatever it can be considered pure devotion service if we are in the right frame of mind, right consciousness. So many people might wonder how this devotional service is so special. What's so special about devotional service? There are so many organizations, so many people rendering, performing so many philanthropic activities. So many charitable organizations doing charity work, distributing food to the poor, constructing hospitals, constructing educational institutions, providing medical aid to the needy. So many kinds of philanthropic activities people perform. And they are happy with that because they are sacrificing their hard-earned money and their energy in rendering service to someone. So when they are told about rendering service to Krishna and how that service is higher than any other kind of service, then they find it very difficult to accept. Because if you are constructing some educational institution, we see so many people are coming, getting education, and taking up good jobs. It appears that service is giving a lot of opportunities to so many people. That's a very high quality of service. And devotional service to Krishna, what's so special about it? How can it benefit people? How can it save the people, save the poor? So this kind of doubt may arise in someone who is not conversant with the science of devotional service. But the Gita talks on a totally different platform. The Gita mostly focuses on not mass service, but quality service. And if quality service can be brought to a mass level, that is still better. But mostly it focuses on quality, in the sense that which is permanent. Service that yields permanent results. That is real service. Otherwise, we may distribute some food to the poor. How long can he remain healthy, or how long will it keep satisfied? For a few hours, again he's going to become hungry. Again you have to provide food. So any kind of mundane social service has this inherent defect of being temporary and limited. It cannot award permanent satisfaction to the person who is accepting that service. Or take, for example, medical service. Distributing medicines to the needy, to the sick people, to the sick patients. He may get cured, but again, after some days, he's going to fall sick. Right? Something or other is going to happen. So our medicine that we are distributing is not going to provide him permanent relief, permanent good health. It is temporary. It is time bound. It is limited. So therefore, we need to, therefore, as the nature of a service can be judged on the basis of how long lasting it is. That's how we determine the quality of a service. Education institution may be considered as a still better service because that is going to be last, going to help him for throughout the life. Probably that is a higher form of service than just distributing food. You're distributing knowledge. That could be considered as a still higher form of service. But what exactly is the best service? That which is a permanent asset for him, for the recipient. That is the top quality service. So when we are rendering devotional service or when we are giving Krishna consciousness to others, why do we call it the best service? Because the person who is receiving it, he is going to be slowly, gradually, he is freeing himself from the repeated cycle of birth and death. He is disentangling himself from this vicious cycle of birth and death. Whenever we chant Krishna's holy names, whenever we read, we are slowly coming out of this cycle of birth and death. And we are gradually progressing towards eternal life. Every step, slowly, step by step. Therefore, that is real service. And there is no turning back. Krishna says, Neha Vikramana Shosti Pratyavayona Vidyate Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya. Even a little service rendered can save us from the greatest danger. Trayate Mahato Bhayat. Even a little service rendered can award the highest benefit. Therefore, devotion service is the highest quality service. Another danger of performing just mundane service is that the person who is receiving the service, he may misuse it. I give some food to someone or I cure some patient. What if he is a criminal? He becomes a criminal. And then he causes some terrible disaster in the country. We will be held responsible for that. Is it not? Because I was the one who cured him and provided him good health. So karmically I am involved. I get the karmic reaction. Although I had no intentions of doing that. He was a sick patient. He was not doing any harm. I treated him. He caused great harm. So therefore, although we may have no intentions of doing anything bad, but our service may not be utilized properly. The person who is receiving the service may misuse it for his own ulterior benefits. Therefore, mundane social service has this drawback. First of all, it is limited in capacity, limited in quantity. Plus, this service has this problem. It can involve you more karmically in this cycle of birth and death. You may become more entangled in the law of action and reaction. So therefore, we need to understand that devotional service is not any ordinary kind of service. Not just any kind of philanthropic service. Not just slightly better philanthropic service. It is the highest form of service. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. It is purifying. It can free us from the laws of action and reaction. Whatever actions and reaction we have accrued till now, that can also be cleansed. Cheto darpana marjanam. Whatever accumulated reactions are there in our account, that also is vanished. And it doesn't create any more further reactions. So therefore, we need to understand this seriously. How rendering devotional service to Krishna, mat karma krin mat paramo, is the highest quality of service we can ever imagine to render to someone. Therefore, we should encourage everyone to engage in the devotional service of Krishna. That is the best social welfare activity we can render to the society. Not just society, to the whole universe, the root of all creation. In the final section of the purport, Prabhupada is again summarizing the whole chapter's contents. He says, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, 400, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Thus, Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishwarupa or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus. But for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important, but the original form, 200 Shyamasundar. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shyamasundar form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, that the purport of the 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. So in India, we have this understanding that Vishnu is the origin, Vishnu is the original form from whom all incarnations emanate. But here we understand that, and Krishna himself clarifies, he shows a universal form, then his 400 form, and then finally his 200 form. And he says, Sudur darsham idam rupam. He says, this 200 form, O Arjun, that you are beholding now, is a form that is that even the demigods are anxious to see. Even the demigods in the higher planetary systems, it is such a rare form that even they are anxious to see this 200 form. It is such a rare thing. So here Prabhupada is explaining that Vishnu also finds its origin in the form of Krishna. Krishna is the origin of all Vishnu forms also. The 200 original form. And the Bible also says that, right? Man was made in the image of God. So if we are 200, God is also 200. Krishna is a 200 form. And all 400 forms originate from Krishna. The Brahma Samhita also gives the example of a lamp, of a candle. A candle is lit, and that candle is used to light up so many other candles. All candles have the same power, same potential to diffuse light. But that one original candle, that is used to light up all other candles. So although all candles have the same power, same potency, same brightness, still that original candle has a certain uniqueness. It retains its uniqueness. So therefore, Krishna is compared to that original candle that lights up so many other Vishnu candles, Vishnu forms. So the universal form that was displayed before Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is a temporary manifestation that was displayed just to show who God is. Otherwise, people have so many misunderstandings about the personality and the position of God. Anyone who displays some magic, some jugglery, he is considered God, an incarnation. Someone who can create some gold or some ash, someone who can instantly heal someone of his disease or predict some future, predict some past, he is considered God because he is displaying some cheap mystic power. So therefore, Krishna, to confirm the position of God, he is displaying his universal form to Arjuna. And Arjuna also accepts him as the supreme. So if anyone in the future or anyone who comes before us says that he is God, the best way to check is to request him. Please show your universal form and then I can accept you as God. Simply some tricks is not enough to prove his godhood. So the reason why the universal form was shown is to warn us or to protect us from being misled by so many cheaters who sprung up in this modern age of Kali Yuga, trying to prove that they are God and they can show some magic and some mystic power. So we should be extremely careful about such pretenders, cheaters. And if at all we fall a prey to their trap, then we should understand that our spiritual life is doomed forever. There is no hope. So let us accept this verse and let us accept the divine supreme transcendental position of Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead and try to render as much devotion service to him, and in this way try to render the best quality service for everyone, for the whole creation. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop here. If anyone has any questions, we can take some.
जब राधा रास बिहारी का मंदिर बना रहे थे पूना गए थे तो आप मल्होत्रा जी एक निश्चित थे बहुत बड़े तो वो से प्रश्न करने लगे प्रभुपाद जी आप तो अपने टेंपल में इतना पत्थर लगाते हो इतने कॉस्टली आइटम लगाते हो क्यों लगाते क्यों गरीबों के अंदर ये दिया जाए वो दिया जाए ऐसे करके दिया प्रभुपाद जी ने उत्तर दिया मैं इनको अपने मंदिर में इसलिए आकर्षित बनाना चाहता हूँ ताकि लोग सुनने आए पेड़ के नीचे बैठ के मेरी बात कोई सुनेगा नहीं मैं इनको गरीब नहीं बनाना चाहता दीन दुखी नहीं बनाना चाहता हमेशा के लिए इनका जन्म मृत्यु का विशेष सर्कल से निकालना चाहता हूँ और इसलिए मेरे मंदिर में मार्बल बड़ी अच्छी से अच्छी चीजें लगा के मैं उसको खड़ा कर रहा हूँ ताकि लोग आए और सुने ये जैसे आपने कहा कि तरह तरह के लोग अपनी दवाइयां देते हैं कोई एजुकेशन डिस्ट्रीब्यूट कर रहा है कोई बोला मैंने दीन दुखी नहीं बनाना लोग तो ऐसा
थैंक यू धन्यवाद एनीवन एल्स वुड लाइक टू से समथिंग कमेंट समथिंग Because that's what people want. They want some cheap thing. If they want the real thing, they won't get attracted. If you want to purchase diamond, you won't get attracted to people who are selling plastics. Right? So because there is a demand for plastic, there are plastic sellers. So that is a science. To the obtaining mystic powers, it's a Vedic science where if you perform some austerities, some tapasya, you can obtain certain mystic powers. Right now, we have lost that science. Therefore, we have no idea how to obtain that. And even if we somehow happen to obtain them, we will misuse them. So it's good in one sense that we don't have those powers. But it's a science. You can, by performing certain austerities, certain kinds of activities, one can obtain certain kind of powers. And people who have those powers generally tend to misuse them, either by creating some nuisance or by claiming to be God. Because people have no scientific understanding of the position of God. They have no understanding who real God is, what are his supreme powers. There is no educational institution, there is no educational system where people are educated about the science of God. So therefore they get carried away by these kind of displays, these kind of cheap displays. So it's our duty to widely propagate this knowledge so that people don't get misled. And just like diamonds, if you want to purchase diamonds, everyone doesn't have the capacity, right? So you need a certain amount of spiritual credits also to appreciate and accept the original person as God. It's not possible with everyone. Krishna says in the Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu, out of thousands of men, Kaschid Yatati Siddhaye, hardly one takes to it. And out of thousands of people who have taken it, Kaschin Mam Veti Tattvata, hardly one attains perfection. So it is natural. We should expect that. When we preach to thousands of people, then we can expect one to take this message seriously. And out of thousands of people who have taken this message seriously, one will achieve perfection. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. And we are preaching in a prison house. This material world is considered like a prison house. How many of the prison inmates want to actually reform themselves and come out? Very few, right? Prison is meant for rebellious people. So here we are all rebellious people who have rebelled against God and His position. And very few people will be interested in reforming themselves and going back to Godhead. That's natural. Only few people will take interest in this message of reforming themselves and coming out of this cycle of birth and death, coming out of this material world and taking interest in going back home, back to Godhead. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki.